The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but with all that's going on in the news, you wonder, how does God feel about social distancing? Well, my friend, since the Bible commands us to assemble together as Christians, talks about the laying on of hands as a ritual, offers statements such as greet one another with a holy kiss, I think the answer is fairly obvious. Now, granted, those customs were cultural and not mandated from all time. I'm not saying that if you go to church, they have to lay hands or kiss anybody. I'm just saying that that is in the Bible, so it at least speaks volumes about the fact that God was assuming we're going to be together in some way. I just wanted to review all of that. And now the latest news. I'll start with the Cliff Notes or Reader's Digest version. Then I'll go back and fill in some details. Sometimes it's good to just cut to the bone. A, late 2016, early 2017, the government unmasks General Flynn. B, 2020, the government masks everyone else. Well, not everyone else. I do wonder how many of the released criminals are social distancing and wearing masks. Somehow, I doubt that they're too worried. I doubt that they're losing a whole lot of sleep over it. What's the government going to do? Put them in jail? But news in the present isn't nearly as fun as news from the future. That's right. It's time once again for another episode of Headlines from the Future with your old pal, Bob. One year from now, in the future, the phrase born again is made illegal in many states by executive order. Why? Because the phrase refers specifically to the Spirit of God, known in the Christian vernacular as the Holy Spirit, in response to a person's prayer for forgiveness and act of repentance. He comes inside their souls, indwelling them for the rest of their lives. Why is this illegal, you ask? Simple, really. By living inside of us, the Holy Spirit is not obeying social distancing. You've been listening to Headlines from the Future with your old pal, Bob. Well, bizarre as the future may sound, nothing can compete with the present, especially where Joe Biden is concerned. So now it's time for our next update, our Joe Biden update. This is from a recent interview where Biden is asked about the nonstop energy of Donald Trump. Now, usually I would just play the audio. I decided this time that I wanted to instead write out the transcript. I have the exact written transcript because these words need to be carefully pondered. Joe Biden is asked again about the energy of Donald Trump and whether he thinks it's going to be hard to compete against that in the general election, Biden says, and I quote, "In terms of energy, I don't have any chuckle. I don't have any problem comparing my energy level to Donald Trump." All right, now this one is too easy. So instead of stating the obvious outright, allow me to defend Uncle Joe. Perhaps his low voltage is a deliberate conservation of energy. His contribution in the never-ending battle against global warming. My friends, I wish all of the news was this humorous. It is not. I want you to listen to some chilling words from Illinois State Health Director at a very recent press conference.
"You were in hospice and had already been given, you know, a few weeks to live, and then you also were found to have COVID. That would be counted as a COVID death. It means that if technically, even if you died of a clear alternate cause, but you had COVID at the same time, it's still listed as a COVID death. So everyone who's listed as a COVID death doesn't mean that that was the cause of the death, but they had COVID at the time of death."
Ladies and gentlemen, this was not some confession given while kicking and screaming under legal cross-examination. As you heard for yourself, she said this casually and matter-of-factly. Had such words been spoken by a lesser-known doctor complaining about the practice on YouTube video, and there have been many doctors doing that, there's a good chance it would have been pulled, as many of these have been pulled. Should the thought police decide to pull this one when it's coming straight out of the horse's mouth, a doctor appointed by a Democrat governor, a governor who has demonstrated his own unbridled enthusiasm with monster health regulations, well, they're going to find themselves in a conundrum, aren't they? Now, that is an original version that I got from the local Illinois station, Channel 25 News. I looked over the internet. There is a YouTube version as well. Like I said, one never knows how long anything will last on YouTube these days, despite the interesting source in this particular case. But be of good cheer. I have no doubt that if YouTube pulls it, the cause for the death of the video will be listed as COVID-19. My friends, where are we headed with all this? Perhaps it can best be illustrated with a fairy tale. I would like to offer a tribute to one of the most brilliant authors of all time, a man whom I have always admired, the genius Hans Christian Andersen. This tribute, in the tradition of Hollywood today, is a remake, or shall we say a rewrite, or reimagining, as these things are often called. Yes, my own version of Andersen's provocative short story, The Emperor's New Clothes. Now, as you know, remakes are usually terrible. I would be naive to think that mine would be any different, especially if my story got too long and convoluted. So I promise to keep it brief and simply cut to the very last scene of the story, especially since it's a story you're all familiar with anyway. Last scene, new version, The Emperor's New Clothes. After the little boy cried out that the emperor at the parade wasn't wearing any clothes, everyone in the crowd saw that the child was right. There was something about the blunt innocence of youth. It served as shock value, a wake-up call, like cold water thrown in the face. All at once they saw it for themselves. Indeed, the king was truly naked. He had nothing on at all, not a stitch of clothing anywhere. Nothing on his arms, nothing on his legs, or stomach, or backside. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the king was naked, naked as the day he was born. Everyone had fallen for the fake tailor's trickery, but by the time they figured it out, that crafty, clever tailor was long gone, rich as Midas. In the end, all the tailor had spun was a tale. He managed to fool the king. He managed to fool the queen. He managed to fool the royal staff and the peasants. Everybody riding out of town just as fast as he could, laughing all the way, he marveled at how easily he had been able to spread the gullible belief that only intelligent people could see the king's spiffy new outfit. And who wanted to admit that they weren't intelligent? Nobody saw the clothes because there were no clothes. Nobody saw the clothes, but everyone thought everyone else saw the clothes. Instead of trusting their own eyes, people assumed that the majority must be correct. Indeed, politically correct, since the king was involved, and politics are simple when all you're doing is obeying a king. Only one genuine article of clothing did the tailor really sell to the emperor king, something inexpensive and extremely easy to make. But as I said before, this was not worn on his arms or legs or stomach or back. No, this was worn on the face. A mask. The king did ride in the parade with a mask. It was the only thing he really had on. It was the only thing the crowd really saw. It cost the king a fortune. To make up for his loss, he taxed the people until they hardly had any money left themselves. The country went into an economic depression, and the king did own one fine, cool, awesome-looking mask. But that was just about all he owned, and the rich, happy, laughing tailor lived happily ever after. With all this talk about the pandemic and government overreach, people are ignoring another huge news story. Government overreach on steroids with this one, an attempt on the part of the outgoing Obama administration, which we've been hearing about for years, but has now been 100% authenticated. Outgoing Obama administration trying to sabotage the incoming Trump administration and the way they railroaded his choice as National Security Advisor General Flynn. Now, just recently related to this, I was listening to Senator Lindsey Graham telling Judge Jeanine Pirro what he plans to do with his oversight committee regarding the FBI handling of Flynn. I have heard this song and dance before from Lindsey. Graham makes a loud, grand noise about the many things he plans to do, but when I listen hard to what he actually did, the only noise I hear is this. Yes, I hear nothing but crickets. All right. I'm exaggerating a little bit. Certainly, Graham has done more than just brag to Pirro about his plans. He's also bragged on Hannity's show. Back to Deep State and Donald Trump. So let's see. Let's just add this up. We have declassified emails, text messages, testimonies, handwritten notes, all proving that the FBI under the outgoing Obama administration completely railroaded General Flynn in order to get him out of the way, lest his experience discover the invented, drummed up, false investigation of Trump and quote unquote Russian collusion, something the CIA and NIA were also in on. We have written transcripts of people like Adam Schiff, Clapper, Rice, Brennan saying one thing under oath and then telling much different televised stories on DCS TV. That stands for Democrat Cheerleading Squad TV. Under oath, there was no evidence of collusion, at least none that they knew of. On television, oh, well, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde could not have done much better. Naturally, they were smart enough not to lie under oath, acting for a broadcast over the gullible Sheep Meadows, was another story altogether. So now President Obama recently is talking about how disheartening it is that under President Trump's new Attorney General Barr, Flynn's charges have been withdrawn. He says, our basic understanding of rule of law is at risk. Now this is touching. President Obama concerned about the rule of law. His deep, heartfelt concern moves me close to tears. This is like the wolf in the Three Little Pigs story complaining that after blowing the first two houses down, the surviving pig had no legal right to build a brick house. Wolf Dude also complains that the surviving pig's consumed brothers had not been properly marinated, nor was there any applesauce in the crumbled kitchen to go with the meal. A travesty of justice, for sure. But if justice has a middle name, it must be Gavin Newsom. The California question continues. How can we get the governor to listen? We want him to reopen the state. He just won't listen. Well, be of good cheer. Your old pal Bob will tell you just exactly what to do. How to get Governor Newsom to listen. Declare that you're here illegally and then demand that he reopen the state. Yes, sir, life sure is fun these days in beautiful, sunny California. Just recently, I went to the grocery store with my lovely wife. At the checkout stand, they had stacks and stacks of masks for sale, nicely wrapped in plastic, a material shopping bags weren't allowed to be made of in California grocery stores before previous government overreach became superseded by current government overreach. What a wonderful gesture, selling these really cool masks. Well, bless their hearts. Hey, moms and dads, one fine stocking stuffer for Christmas morning. Then again, maybe this utter nonsense will be over by Christmas. Then again, maybe it won't. If I were a betting man, I'd go with the latter. My friends, aren't you just loving the way California is reopening? Now certain kinds of businesses and retail stores that were called non-essential, they were called that before, now they can reopen again. Great sigh of relief. We'll all sleep better at night. No more need for protests, right? Now, I should tell you, these reopened stores are only open for curbside pickup, most of them. And naturally, everyone, store workers and customers alike, need to wear those incredible masks. Just a question or two, if I may. Since we were already doing this mask-wearing, social distancing, 6 feet apart stuff at essential services, why wouldn't we have been doing them all along for the non-essential services, many of which has since gone out of business? Soup Plantation has gone out of business, many others. And if somebody wants to argue that the whole mask, six-foot spacing dance routine would not have kept the non-essential services safe before, well, then why is it keeping them safe now? And why were we required these past 2 months to wear them in banks and grocery stores if they weren't really protecting anyone from anything other than a lawsuit or a fine? If they don't do any good, let's stop mandating them. On the other hand, if they could have helped every business stay open these past 2 months, then somebody needs to explain why those businesses were commanded to close down. Are you catching on, folks? This may have begun with legitimate concern, and I do think that originally there was legitimate concern for a virus, but the politics have metastasized far quicker and far greater than any virus ever could. But Dr. Fauci thinks it's still too soon to open up completely. Oh, does Dr. Fauci think it's too soon to open up? Really? Well, that's good enough for me. Yes, sir. After all, his track record has been so accurate up to now. First, he said COVID-19 would not be a serious problem. Then he said all we needed to do was stop shaking hands and also be careful to always wash our hands. Oh, and remember how emphatic he was that we didn't need masks. Now we need them. Now, depending on the city or the state, you can get arrested for not wearing one. Meanwhile, his sharp, crack insight leads to virtually shutting down an entire nation, all in the name of flattening the curve. Well, we did. The holy curve has been flattened. Still isn't enough. Fauci thinks it's still too soon to reopen apart from those anemic stage after stage guidelines. And that's not all. We may be back where we started come fall because, woo, jumping Jiminy, the virus could have another outbreak. He also says he'd like to see the day when handshaking more or less is discontinued permanently. This guy's telling us we should never shake hands again. But when asked if he was concerned about people meeting each other on the internet for the first time and getting together for casual sex, no problem. Oh, he did admit that that might come with a risk. Well, on that, I can finally agree with you, Fauci. We can all agree. Yes, life itself is a risk. If you're going to live, you take risk. But oh, no sense taking any risks to restart our entire shutdown country. No, sir. Three cheers for Fauci. He has my trust. Let's just surrender every freedom under our Constitution and allow him to make policy. And if Trump were to fire him, make no mistake, Pelosi and Schiff would arrange for another impeachment faster than you can utter the words mass hysteria, bleeding sheep, brainwashing, power-hungry, salivating politicians, and dead republic. The same should Trump replace Fauci with any one of a myriad, and there are myriads of doctors who see things differently. Fauci, you see, is now the politically correct doctor. Fauci should have gone into the pest control business. By the time he was done with your termite problem, the entire house would be burned down. But the termites, at least, would be gone. Maybe. Possibly. Hopefully. I will give Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx the benefit of the doubt and assume they've been operating with sincere intentions. Be that as it may, I do not recall going to the voting booth in 2016 and electing them to set national policy. And yet their policy, given teeth by narcissistic governors, mayors, and judges, has decimated our economy, including the medical community, many places where the medical community is included, resulting in people dying from all kinds of causes due to the fact that so-called elective procedures have been discontinued until the COVID-19 situation is brought under control. President Trump is being blamed, even though he innocently followed the doctor's wise advice. And whenever he pushes back and says something like, I don't want the cure to be worse than the disease. Are you catching on, folks, to what he was trying to warn us? He doesn't want the cure to be worse than the disease. He's immediately lambasted for saying that by the media, by politicians. Just listen to the doctors, he keeps hearing. They're the professionals. Listen to the doctors. But he only means certain doctors. President Trump, I implore you, stop listening to them. Disband the CDC briefings. Stand your ground, no matter how many Democrats in Washington whine, no matter how many rhinos rhine, no matter how much the mainstream media opines, no matter how many governors think they are divine. Of course, we do need to remind ourselves that from the federal level, all we've been getting are guidelines. Not so on the local level. Mayor Garcetti of L.A., says the city will not be completely reopened until there is a cure for COVID-19. Wow! A cure? How quickly we go from flattening the curve to essentially signaling in PC Morse code that life will never be going back to normal. But let's be frank, to egotistical mayors, this has never, ever been about health. It has instead been about the power he received by exploiting an illness. Either that or he wants us to consider the only other alternative. He's too stupid to realize that many diseases do not have cures. Even a vaccine is not the same as a cure. Well, be of good cheer. It isn't a total loss. After all, some people in LA are able to continue working. Mayor Garcetti, for instance, he still has his job paid for with the tax dollars of those who no longer have jobs. Meanwhile, this piece of work and others like him throughout California are expecting a financial bailout from Washington in the aftermath of such wise economic policies. Those policies apparently include shutting down almost every business in the state, not to mention Sacramento's determination to pay $500 to every illegal resident of California, along with an open invitation for others to sneak through our borders from anywhere in the world for free health care that they're promised, for a free college education that they're promised. Who isn't going to come for that? Hey, maybe we can also throw in the decoder ring, a complimentary box of See's candy, a free Slurpee from 7-Eleven. Come one, come all. Just be careful when you get here. Criminals are being released from jail while law-abiding citizens must stay in their homes. With the occasional exception of a trip to the store, or recently, you could now take a trip to the beach, so long as you keep your mask on and refuse to sunbathe. Yes, of course, such fine-tuned, consistent governing deserves a bailout. Mayor Garcetti, I remind you, just a few months ago, was allowing tens of thousands of homeless and drug addicts to sleep outside of businesses on the open street or under the freeways with drug needles everywhere. Now, he won't allow any resident in LA outside anywhere without a mask. Why do tax dollars continue to pay the salary of this egotistical lunatic megalomaniac? Well, cheer up. There is some good news. Did you know that in Los Angeles, Republicans and Democrats and independents are joining together alike? They are finally fed up with Mayor Tyrannosaurus Garcetti. They want him removed as mayor ASAP, and that can actually be done legally in California. It has been done before a recall election. It takes a petition of about 300,000 signatures. Oh, wait. Sorry, almost forgot. You see, because of Mayor Garcetti's stay-at-home orders, people aren't allowed to legally gather or go door-to-door in order to obtain those orders. They could be thrown in jail if they do. Well, my friends, be encouraged anyway and don't give up. Not on Los Angeles or California or the entire United States of America. Stand your ground, my friends. At times like this, I remember some extremely important words, lyrics to a song. Actually, I'm sure you'll recognize them. Here's just a few of them. This is my quest to follow that star. No matter how hopeless, no matter how far, to fight for the right without question or pause, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. Let's listen to this beautiful song from the musical Man of La Mancha.
To bear with unbearable sorrow.
You're listening to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. I would like to introduce a very special guest. He has been on our program before, but it's been far too long. So I contacted him last week about coming on again. Chuck Austin is a pastor here in California. I thought it would be good to hear from a pastor today amidst the controversy of churches not being allowed to gather. Chuck is a graduate of San Jose State University and a graduate of Denver Seminary, where I also attended. We got to know each other there and became good friends. Over the years, I have more and more considered him to be one of my dearest friends. Chuck worked for years with the Conservative Baptist Home Mission Society in campus ministry. He has been pastoring for 35 years, and in that time pastored four different churches, currently is continuing to pastor one of them. Chuck has also served on various boards, including the Crisis Pregnancy Center and the Conservative Baptist Association of California's Northern Preordination Committee. He also worked part-time for the San Francisco Giants, worked or maybe still works. We'll have to ask him about that. I find that fascinating. We need to find out more. And he is also the recipient of the 2018 Harry Siebert Award. Pastor Chuck Austin, welcome to our program.
Hey, Bob, good to be with you.
It's good to be with you. It's been so long. I looked it up on my computer, where all my on my website, where all my shows are listed. You have not been on since 2010. That's been 10 years, and I feel like it was just yesterday. How did I let so much time go without having you on again?
You must have forgotten about me, Bob.
And yet we've talked, we've communicated. I certainly didn't forget. It's one of those, boy, is it just, have you noticed, Chuck, that the older you get, the faster the years go by? I knew it had been a while. I had no idea it had been that long ago.
No, neither did I. I looked it up, too, just because you got me curious when we talked earlier. And I thought, wow, it's April of 2010. And here we are in May of 2020. So I guess I'm your once a decade, guest.
Well, I do remember that one month after that, I met my lovely wife to be Dana. I had already met her, but we went on our first date actually on Mother's Day in May following you being on. So I guess my excuse is I got so enchanted by Dana that I just forgot about everybody I ever.
Well, I can see that. It's easy when you meet someone as lovely as Dana to, go that route. So you're forgiven, Bob.
Okay. Well, she is lovely. And you have a very lovely and dear wife, Janice, whom I also know. I'm assuming she's listening. So I want to say hello to Janice. And you guys have been happily married for many, many years. I'm sure you wouldn't pretend you've never had any problems. All people do, but happily married, healthy family. How many children, again, do you have, Chuck?
And I have two.
Two, and how old are they now? I almost hate to ask.
Wow, Holly's 38 and Ben is 34.
Oh, my goodness. And I feel like yesterday I was only 30. Isn't that something else? There's a line from one of my plays that I wrote. It was called All in One Night, and one of the characters in the plays, they're talking about the future and someday when you're going to be 60. And he says, who cares what happens to us after we turn 60? I can't believe I ever wrote that, but I did.
I know.
Well, listen, one of the reasons I did want to have you on, aside from the fact that it's been far too long, is you're a pastor here in California. I wanted our audience to hear firsthand. A lot of them go to church. A lot of the people that listen to my show are conservatives who don't go to church, or liberals who disagree with everything we say and they still tune in. Most church parishioners are thinking about this from their point of view. From the point of view as a pastor, what has this been like? Has your church been continuing to meet on Zoom? What kinds of plans do you have to open up? Who are you working with in the city? I'd just like to hear a lot of that stuff.
Well, Bob, it basically, when the sheltering in place took effect, it took effect in mid-March, and so we were looking at maybe being back early April, because that's what we were being told. We were going to flatten the curve by having everybody stay home, and so like most entities, we got caught behind the eight ball, and so as we understood this to go on longer, we realize that we've got to stay in touch with our people and got to be able to minister to them regardless of whether we are meeting in a building or not. So we began through the help of several talented people in our church to be able to put together sermons that are now on YouTube. We began to find out about Zoom so we could have not only board meetings, but Bible studies. We've even got the creativity of our people up and running because they said, hey, let's have an evening with God on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. So they incorporated that. We, after church today, after it was aired on YouTube, we had our very first fellowship chat for anybody in our church who wanted to, you know, come on to Zoom, talk, tell us what was going on. There's been a lot of obviously phone calls going on, letters going out, touching base with people to make sure they're okay, and especially for our older people to make sure that they're getting the food from the grocery stores that they need. And so the network that is our church is thriving and it's doing very well.
I'm sure you're getting different opinions. I have heard that very soon, I believe it's going to be on Memorial Day, there's going to be a lot of churches around California that just decide they're opening up. And then there's the other issue, which I you may have heard me go through part of this in my monologue, that even when we're technically allowed to open up, they're going to have masks. They're going to tell you how many seats you have to have in the room, how many spaces you have to walk behind people. What kind of, and I imagine there's a spectrum, I'd like to know, are you hearing from some people who are, have been legitimately scared or frightened or they're afraid for their own health? Are you hearing from others that want you to do civil disobedience? Are you hearing from others that are somewhere in between where they're anxious to open up, but they don't want to go against the law? What's the spectrum you've been getting from your parishioners?
The spectrum that I've been getting is you have some fear factor there, anxiety, some depression, you know, because in some cases they are sheltering at home. They don't have any interaction with people. So one person told me last week that they're getting extremely scared to even go out, whether it's to the post office or the grocery store, for whatever reason that, you know, they might catch it. So you still have to stay in contact with those people and reassure them that they're going to be okay. You know, as far as our church goes, we were given someone in our church sent us 24 questions that every church should ask itself before it reopens. And so our board got together on May 5th, and we went through the 13 of the 24 that I thought pertained specifically to us in order to do the best that we can do to make sure that we're ready to reopen whenever Santa Clara County gives that okay and says, okay, you can have this many people. Multiple services or whatever it might be in order to meet the spiritual and the social needs of our people. It's all virgin territory, Bob, as you know, and we're doing the best that we can with the information that we've got.
Could you tell us what some of those questions are? Maybe not all 15, but I'm interested to hear what, I think that's great you're wrestling with these questions.
Well, one of them is, how clean is our church? I mean, you like to think your church is clean, and you like to think your church is disinfected and so on and so forth, but chances are our church is probably in need of a good cleaning. So one of the things we wanted to do was make sure that our buildings are clean and our buildings are disinfected. It's probably been far too long since that has occurred anyway.
There's also the issue of cleansing your church from demons, and if demons are forced to obey the social distancing and then they read the law, then there'll be less demons in our churches too.
There you go. Some of the other ones would involve multiple services, you know, asking people to select which service they would like to attend, leaving enough space so that if a visitor came, they would be welcome into the building. When I was in the Philippines back in 2009, I spoke at a church there. And after church, the pastor and his wife took us out to dinner at a restaurant that was on one of the, not on the ground floor, but was on like the roof of the building. And they were going through swine flu back then. And so when we walked in the building, they swiped our forehead to see if we had a any temperature. And if we'd had a temperature, we were not going to be allowed to go up to that restaurant. Our board even thought about doing something as simple as that, just to make sure that No one is coming in who's ill or has anything else that somebody else might be able to contract. We also talked about offerings. We also talked about perhaps decreased attendance because older people don't want to necessarily come out, among other things that we felt, okay, we need to address these. We need to be prepared. We need to make sure that we're still covering all of our bases just to make sure everyone can feel safe and secure.
Okay, now a lot of that makes sense. Here's the kicker. When we get to that point, do you really believe it'll be up to your church anyway, or do you think Sacramento will just send you some orders and tell you just exactly what you're going to do?
I really think it's going to be up to our church. I really do. I mean, I think, you know, in much the same way as when the Santa Clara County said, you can't have more than 100, or you can't have more than 35, or you can't have more than 10. So if they come back and say, well, you can have 50 at a service or 100 at a service or whatever you can have at a service, it'll be up to our church to determine, well, where can we put those services so that people can come? And we obviously are going to probably offer multiple options for them to choose from.
Okay, so not from Sacramento necessarily, from the governor, but you do believe Santa Clara County will give you some mandates.
Well, there'll be some guidelines, but our church is autonomous, and so there's no real hierarchy. We can do, you know, we could have services on Saturday or Friday or Wednesday morning or whenever we want to have them. One of the things we do tell our people is that, you know, the church is autonomous, that we're not subjected to necessarily the government telling us what to do anyway more than the government is subjected to us telling them what to do. It works best that way. But you have to survive and cohabitate together as best you can, you know, using the wisdom that you've been given and the common sense that you've been given.
Yeah, I agree. You are autonomous and our Constitution is pretty clear about that. I sometimes wonder if some of these local governments got the memo, though.
Well, you know, this is just one of those things that, you know, either really perplexes you or you continue to see that God is in control and that he's working and that you can trust him with the results. And so I opt to land on the side of God being at work and that he's going to bring this to the proper conclusion, going to give us the wisdom that we need to be able to follow him, because that's where our allegiance is ultimately.
Yeah, I agree. And again, it's not an either or thing. We can totally trust God, believe he's in control, believe he's sovereign, that nothing can happen without him allowing it. But at the same time, sometimes part of the way he wants to answer those prayers is he calls us to take a stand. I remember Peter and John being commanded by the government not to preach outside, and they knew God was in control, but part of that control is they said, we submit to God and not to you. Those were their words, whether to listen to you or to God, you must be the judge. We cannot but talk about what we have seen and heard. So it's certainly a balance. I do have the hope and certainly trust God, but I do think that there are times when God calls his people to take a stand. And that's not a judgment on any Christian out there. God has always had Christians that stand outside a system and condemn it, and others who go inside a system and try to work with it. He's always used both people, so there's no reason for people to point fingers. I'm just curious what you and what different Christians have decided to do as you're coming down on this.
We've just decided that, you know, we've got to be remain faithful to the Lord. We've got to keep our eyes focused on him and do what makes his heart happy. We also have to see that we live in a society that isn't necessarily pro-God or pro-church, and we have to somehow be able to survive within that. But if push comes to shove, then your allegiance and your loyalty is always going to be to God first. It's always going to be to him, and if we suffer because of it, well, we suffer, you know, and if we succeed, we succeed. But God is the one who gets all the glory, and God's the one who we've got our eyes fixed on because we realize he's the same yesterday, today, and forever. And so we remember, you know, what he's done, and we follow him wholeheartedly and without apology.
Absolutely. I think that's a very positive, very well-balanced approach. We will trust God. We will work with the government as much as we can. But if it finally comes to push and shove, And then we will trust God with even more faith, and we will just do the right thing and take what comes.
Oh, absolutely. For example, you know, you take offerings, for example. We haven't had a church service since March 8th. And so that means we've not passed any offering bag since then. You know, I'm convinced if God wants our church to survive and succeed, we don't have to pass a bag. God will see to it that all of our needs are met and that we don't need to worry. And lo and behold, the treasurer the other day sent me an email saying, oh, by the way, here was the total of offerings for the month of whatever month it was. Maybe it was April. And I just stared back and I went, you're kidding me. Wow. You know, I'm so proud of our people.
So I mean, it was more than you expected.
It was way more than I expected.
That's
and
wonderful.
I just thought, yeah. Wow. Because, you know, whether we're open or whether we're closed physically, there are still obligations the church has to missionaries and to mission organizations and schools and things like that that we give money to, because I believe a church should tithe its budget, part of its budget, to outside organizations. And I thought, okay, what's going to happen here? You know, so we either trust man or we trust God. And so when she sent me the numbers, I just sort of stared at my screen. And I sent an email out to the guys on the board and I said, look at this, guys. Is this amazing or what?
That is really great to hear, my friend. Before the pandemic hit, because that's been what we've been living, breathing, what was your church doing and what was it all about? And what were the issues that you were very passionate about? Could be politically, could be just within theology and church circles and ministry. What was your life about before everything changed?
Well, the goal of Berryessa Valley Church is to extend the hope of Jesus Christ to San Jose and beyond through loving, through caring, through serving. So everything we do fits into that mantra. One of the things that we do and we're gearing up for before the pandemic stopped it was we have twice a year, we do these huge community family festivals where we go out into the neighborhood and just invite people to our campus. And we have jump houses and dunk tanks and, you know, skateboarders and all kinds of stuff on our campus. And we do that in order to introduce our community to our church and realize that, you know, we're not some kind of zombies, but we're real life people with issues and concerns. And we just want to show them that our church cares for them and loves them. We're also involved with the Second Harvest Food Bank on a regular basis, where we go and pack up food and we try to serve our community as best we can in a variety of ways. We also are aware that it's not about us. You know, it's not about the holy huddle and everybody being happy inside the four walls. It's about us going out into the community and having people come to know us, rub shoulders with us, which doesn't work with social distancing, you know, but rub shoulders with us and get to know us so that, you know, when push comes to shove and a crisis comes in their life, they go, wow, those people in that church, they really cared about me. They really were interested in me. Hey, I think I'll give them a call. And so we try to make ourselves as available as we can in order to meet them on a social level as well as a spiritual level, because everyone has spiritual needs.
Very cool. Now, how's your family doing? How's Janice doing? What's she been up to?
Janice is retired.
And was she was a, am I remembering correctly, was she a school teacher?
Yeah, she taught for like 35 years in Christian school, finished up at Santa Clara Christian School, where she was the fifth grade teacher. So she retired. In fact, a year ago today was her retirement party at the school. So she's been doing some other things, and now the school is luring her basically out of retirement to work in their office, because she's finding that she doesn't like being home all that much. So she's thinking about going back in August or September, whenever they open back up.
That is pretty amazing. Dana retired almost a year ago today, very, very close to that. She seems busier than she ever was, and she was pretty busy before. But I'm feeling like I'm getting old talking about our wives retiring, Chuck. Of course, you and I haven't retired yet, but I got the feeling one of these days we're going to be in this old people's home eating succotash, saying, I remember back in 2020, the great mask controversy.
Well, Bob, you and I love what we do. And when you love what you do, in the words of George Burns, you never work a day in your life.
I remember when they asked, George Burns was 100, but he was always walking on stage with these young blondes, these buxom babes. And they said, why don't you ever date anybody your age? He says, I'd be happy to date somebody my age. There is nobody my age. Anyway, I love George Burns. All right. You're my good friend. We'll have you on again really soon. God bless you and God bless Janice and your church.
Hey, give my best to Dana and you take care, Bob. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Chuck. And I will see all of you, ladies and gentlemen, next week.
Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.